Welcome to a special episode of PageCast, recorded at the Open Book Festival, Cape Town's annual literary gathering, spotlighting South African writing within a global conversation. Enjoy.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Cindy. It's nice to see you.
It's good to see you. We were discussing in the background of all of this how this is also your first time doing a podcast.
Absolutely.
So we're both entering
new territory.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good to see you. Mm. I know that you left and you are in Edinburgh in Scotland. Yes. Mm-hmm. And you are busy with a PhD. Is it done?
It's done now. Yes.
It's done. Congratulations. Thank you. The University of Dundee.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good to see you back home.
Yes, it's good to be home.
Even though I think you're just dipping in and then returning.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's good to be in conversation with a fellow poet.
Yes.
And fellow Durbanite.
Exactly.
You and I were born in the same year, 1990. Mm-hmm. Both of us born in Durban. Mm-hmm. And I've really enjoyed watching the work that you've done over the years. So, I mean, you're a busy man within the South African literary landscape, even if you're working from afar right now. Mm. And so let me roll out a list of your accomplishments to remind ourselves exactly who you are. Mm-hmm. So you've written two novels, mm-hmm. Tunnels, which I haven't actually had a chance to read, sadly, but I will. But that was in 2023, and I felt like it went under the radar in some way. Do you feel the same way?
Yes, I feel the same way too.
Yeah. But then you wrote A Hibiscus Coast, mm-hmm. in 2021, mm-hmm. and that went on to be longlisted for the 2022 Sunday Times Fiction Prize.
Yes.
And then you've also written two short story collections. Mm-hmm. The First Law of Sadness, which is a title I'm so jealous of. I think it's so beautiful. And it also was the winner of the 2018 Nadine Gordimer Award. And then you wrote Stations. And then you wrote two poetry collections. Your first literary offering, which was The Myth Is That We're All in This Together, I believe.
Yes.
And now we've got your most recent.
Yes.
The Book of Unrest that just came out this year. So congratulations.
Thank you.
I mean, I want to talk about the Book of Unrest, and I want to talk about also Uhlanga and that sort of work. And also, you're the winner of the Thomas Pringle Award, let me not forget, and the Desperate Literature Award, and the 2021 National Poetry Prize. So you've done a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Accomplishments aside.
Yes.
Let's jump into this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good place to start is with the text itself.
Yeah.
And so I think it's good to hear a passage or something or a poem from you. So it's really nice to always hear it in the author's voice. So would you just give us a taste of the text?
I'll read the first poem from the Book of Unrest. It's called Dramatis Personae. This person who is formed from other people. Where must I slouch when the others go off to sleep or to myth? When the book is forgotten and couched in rows of bending shelves, deep within or outwith. Inside myself is a lonely place. It is better to know myself through a self, faced with a pressure under which it must liquefy or shatter. Most of a poem is words, in the way I am mostly water, not the part that matters.
Yeah, this is quite an interesting book, a really interesting offering from you. Although I think having read most of your works, they are really digressive and different. There's no sort of clear pattern that I can detect having read your works. But can you tell us or share with us how this collection came about?
Sure. Mm. So a minor correction, this book came out in 2022.
Oh.
But I didn't launch it in South Africa.
Ah,
so
okay.
That's kind of what happened. In retrospect, I wrote this book in the midst of a nervous breakdown,
mm-hmm.
Which was surrounding a lot of things happening in my life, but was also a time of civic and emotional unrest, what we called the July unrest, mm-hmm. in Durban, our hometown, which I think had some pretty severe psychic consequences for everybody who lived there and everybody has connections to the place. And At the same time, I was undergoing a process of kind of building myself back up again, having moved from South Africa to Scotland, and really having to deeply think about the parts of my being and myself that were, which parts were useful to me, which parts were not useful to me, which parts were hurting me. And I had a lot of unresolved thoughts and in many cases pain stemming from various things that were that happened in my childhood, but also the way that all of these things seemed to be coming to a head in me personally in my early 30s. And I kind of wrote myself through this period of illness with this book, and it almost didn't come out because I thought that perhaps it wasn't appropriate for me to be writing about Durban, about a place that I was no longer living in. So I had to kind of create an imaginary. And a lot of my books are about creating imaginaries. Imaginaries that I can see myself living in, and imaginaries which reflect life as I've experienced them. You know, being born in the early 90s in Durban, both the city and our country and what we practice as poets, you and I, has changed so much during our lives. And I was really just wanting to sort of explore that and to find a place where I could speak about my life and my love of the place that I come from in a way that was poetically meaningful to me. And part of this book is also getting in touch with the texts written by poets that I poets and writers who I really admire, who are from Durban or who had written about in general the coast north and south of the city.
And who, and I mean, I sort of share in your feeling when I didn't leave the country, but I left Durban and moved to Stellenbosch.
Yeah.
And I'd never really left Durban, and I was a real, I just never left the hometown. And when I moved there, I also sort of had a bit of a breakdown and a crisis that went on, but it also, it sparked my writing of the world that also was a world in deep crisis and unrest. So I think that there's something quite interesting about leaving one's home country or one's hometown and going to a different place, and that sort of sense of isolation and what that brings up.
Absolutely.
And how that then inspires the work.
Well, it's fortuitous that this book is here. This is my first novel, Hibiscus Coast. And this book is about a young woman who's forced by family circumstance, but also some events unfolding in her life to move to New Zealand. And it's a book, it's also in some ways a portrait of loneliness and about someone having to create a space for themselves in a place that is not entirely accepting of who she is, this young woman, Mary, and also the immigrant community in South Africa, particularly in the North Shore of Auckland, which is in many ways a bit of an unreformed immigrant community. I know it very well because my, I think I was part of that sort of white flight generation in the 90s, moved to New Zealand, didn't hack it. We moved back after a year. And so in many ways, you know, in talking about patterns in my work, I think that's maybe something that, that I write about a lot. People in dislocation, relocation, and, you know, the difficult thing with moving is you have to bring yourself with. And it doesn't really matter where you move to. You always have to bring your own circumstances and your own memories and your own, your own self with you, which is often a tripping point.
Absolutely. Who were some of those writers that you were accompanied by in the writing of the Book of Unrest?
So the first I would say would be, well, the obvious one would be Fernando Pessoa, the Portuguese writer who grew up in Durban and who wrote his first poems for the Natal Mercury, when he was a teenager, but he left Durban when he was 17. He was a very privileged man. Well, privileged boy. His stepfather, I think, was the consul general for Portugal in Durban in the early 20th century. But he never wrote about Durban, which is kind of funny. But also writers like Douglas Livingston and Ronnie Govender, especially the late Durban Indian writer, very funny writer, but also very lucid about the particularly the classist and racist problems within small communities in Durban. And I found his humor was a really good way to sort of I couldn't replicate his humor. Ronnie Govender, if you've ever read him, he has a novel called The Lani's Pleasure, and it is really, really hilarious. But also writers like Lewis Nkosi, Sally Ann Murray, who we both know, these are all writers who I turn to for perspective, for comfort, for ways of, you know, speaking about things. I was particularly influenced by Douglas Livingston, who has a really interesting biography. He, I think, was born in what's now Malaysia. He lived in Durban a long time. He took microbiological samples of the water along the coast. And he developed an imaginary of a littoral zone, but it's also, you know, the pun is a littoral zone. And I hadn't really read too many writers that dealt with Durban as a place and as a state of mind. So this was my way of kind of trying to bring all of these different influences on me together.
I mean, following up on that, I don't know if you've ever been posed the question, but I'm often asked, do you consider yourself a Durban writer? And it's quite interesting because your work does insist on writing about Durban when the rest of the world seems to think that Joburg and Cape Town are the beginning and end of South Africa and nothing else exists.
It is.
So, you know, what can you talk about always sort of insisting or foregrounding Durban? Mm. I mean, it's really important, but it's not something that we see every day. And so do you consider you, if I pose the question that's been asked of me so many times, are you a Durban writer?
I think that's for other people to say. I remember being really, really upset once when someone I knew, and I don't know whether it was the editor, the sub-editor, but it was a review in the Mail and Guardian that called me a Durban-born Capetonian. Oh. And I took that personally.
That is not okay. That's not okay.
Now, that felt a bit like representational violence.
That was violent. That is violent.
But, I mean, I think I write about Durban. That's where I'm from. The writing, a lot of commercial writing about Durban focuses on, Durban is often sort of misrepresented. Despite it being a UNESCO city of literature, I mean, we both know it's not particularly a literary city. There are lots of festivals. There are lots of writers who, of course, come from there. But in terms of a groundswell of literary stuff, it can be a bit lacking. It's part of why I started Uflanga, 11 years ago, was I was editing a bunch of literary magazines or literary projects, and I noticed a lot of work was coming in from writers from KwaZulu-Natal that wasn't being treated particularly respectfully or with the right sort of... people did not have the knowledge to bring on this work and to edit it respectfully. So I started this magazine for writers from KZN, and that seemed to fill a hole. And then that became Uklanga Press. And a lot of the writers who I've worked with are people from that first magazine, people like Jenna
Proof
Gardini.
Rock.
Yeah,
talking
or Proofrock too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, so writers like Musa Nkosi Kanile, Sifle Ntuli, Jenna Gardini, Francine Simon, all of these people who are from Durban. And I was very proud to bring them and to represent our world and our imaginary to the rest of the country.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you've pivoting to Uhlanga, you have Jenna Gardini. Durban and the Eastern Cape are represented nicely in Uhlanga Press's catalogue, I feel. There's Cobus Moorman, there's Atambile Masola, Tunzigazi Mbungwana, Nondwe Mpoma. So there's and Francine and so many other writers who are from KZN or from the Eastern Cape. And I think it's really beautiful because Uhlanga has, it started in 2014.
Yeah, 2014.
So last year was your 10 years. So yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And, you know, you've offered really inventive and creative works of literature and poetry through Uhlanga, and very diverse voices of through poetry have been offered through your titles. So I want to talk about how you became involved in editing and publishing. Mm. What was that, the early journey? And could you sort of paint us a picture
of
the moment you decided, no, I got to start Uhlanga?
Mm. I studied journalism at Rhodes. And I studied publication design as well as, you know, the entire gamut of journalistic skills. So I started off as a journalist and I got laid off. I had a really nice job for the Sunday Times reviewing beer, and that was great, but that couldn't last forever.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I was getting involved with Proofrock, a magazine that, you know, some friends started. And the journalism stuff really wasn't working out for me so well. So I kind of jumped onto the literary bandwagon. And with the skills that I had from publication design, editing, writing, I sort of thought, okay, great. I can have this convergence of skills that means I can produce books for other people or commercial books rather efficiently and inexpensively. And so I just really just started doing that. And fortunately, the books were successful. And I really wanted to create a space where people could do poetically interesting things, much like your own work, you know, where people are working in between formats or styles, and also trying to open up South Africa's idea of poetics. I'm speaking about like South African poetry in English and Xhosa, the two languages that I've been publishing in. It's important for me that our generation has, we affirm the previous generation's contribution, and then we bring our own work.
Yeah.
Obviously, South Africa's changed a lot in our lifetime, so it's important that our poetry and our literature is able to bear these changes and to reflect better the sort of society that we live in now, with all of its contradictions and broken parts, but also its kind of serendipitous connections. And it's been a magical kind of experience so far.
I mean, in closing, what are the kinds of risks that you're excited to see happening in literature? Or what are the kinds of risks you hope you'd see more of in South African literature today?
I would like to see more multilinguality.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us in South Africa are multilingual. Even if we don't speak languages perfectly, we have to, in our lives, go around and converse with many different kinds of people in many different kinds of ways. And I think that our literature should reflect that. So, we've published recently a book that's in English and isiZulu. Soon we'll publish a book that is in English and Xhosa, and soon we'll publish a book in English and Afrikaans. And I'd like to see that replicated in more commercial presence too. I would like to see people engage with form too, because we've been a very loosey-goosey country, and there's something about the pursuits of craft and form, particularly in poetry, that can do very exciting things. Constraint is often a very good thing. So I think maybe we need to relearn a bit of that, but also I think we're doing fine. You know, spaces like this are fantastic and are becoming more accessible. It's not quite accessible yet. And I think that we need to really think about how we're going to make books in particular more affordable and more accessible to more people. Because that's the only way that once we're, you know, elders, we're going to be able to...
I've got one gray hair. Yeah, we're getting there.
I've got about 20. So, but... yeah, that's the kind of future I want to see.
Oh, Nick, thank you so much for making time.
No, thank you, Cindy.
Thank you to Open Book, to Jonathan Ball. Thank you for this wonderful offering.
Thank you.
The Book of Unrest. And yeah, it's good to see you.
It's great to see you too.
It's good chatting with you.
It's great to chat. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much.